The final chapter of Hebrews, which we heard this morning, begins with instruction that goes to the heart of the Christian life. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Between those two poles are strung all the ways our lives are intertwined with one another. Those we know well and those who are strangers to us. We're not merely individuals who happen to be sharing oxygen. We're communified. I just made that word up. Communified. We belong to God. We belong to one another. And in Christ, we discover along the way we belong to others in ways we didn't even imagine. The communified grace of the Christian life is discovering this again and again and again as you go on. Love and hospitality. Hospitality has long been at the heart of DaySpring's core commitment as a congregation. Those of you who've paid attention to the ministry's chart, which I assume is everyone by now, has noticed the ministry of hospitality. Hospitality literally means love of strangers. Now, it's one thing to have mutual love with someone you know well and share life with. It's another thing to show love to someone you don't know yet, who's different. There are challenges in both. Let's not have rose-colored glasses. But that's why love is in the shape of a cross, because the heart of it is the love made possible by the sacrifice of Christ. In the gospel of Christ, every person and every encounter is the potential for meeting the living God right in your midst. As we go on in life and discover this and are open to this, hospitality is a looking forward, future-oriented dimension of faith. Faith in a God who reveals, a God who will be, God who's not yet fully known but who wants to be known. I mean, think about this. When you welcome someone into your life, in that moment, you are open to what comes next, not knowing yet what that will be and even who that person is. It's this idea that people are the manifestation of the presence of Christ and are to be received as such. And this has been important to the church, to DaySpring, for many years. Renewal Way is technically a public road. The chapel is unlocked all day, every day for prayer. The grounds are an open invitation to come and walk. And almost every day, someone is walking around, almost every day throughout the week. We may not have the largest sanctuary in the world, but we do our best to have a seat and a place and a warm greeting for everyone, even when sometimes that warm greeting is in the form of leaving you alone before a worship service. For some of us, that's the warmest greeting we could be given. Just leave me alone. A theology of scarcity says we need to protect what we have so others don't take it. A theology of abundance is a theology that can extend itself in hospitality that says, break the bread, feed the multitudes. There's enough for everyone to share. Come on, join us. Come away with me to a place where you can be in a quiet, sacred time in a simple state of mind. The church's hospitality is refracted in many directions. Greeters at the front door are usually the first face visitors encounter. Those who clean during the week are providing an inviting place. In worship care, we, and it really is or needs to be just about everyone, takes turns welcoming babies and children and their parents who are often doing heroic work just to pull it together to be here on a Sunday morning. Hospitality is the ministry and discipline of receiving the other with open arms. And the other includes more than humans. This campus has been recognized as a wildlife habitat by the National Wildlife Federation, which means that not only are people are welcome, but space is made for critters too. If you were sitting here, you might have noticed during the welcome the deer that was out behind the windows. The Ministry of Hospitality is a lifeline for those who receive it and for those who offer it. One of the, I think, universal dimensions of our anthropology is that we all need to know we're loved, we're welcomed, we're received, and people want us to be in their presence. What we find is that our faith is open to the future when we welcome the other into it. God has a way of designing us this way and working out our community this way. God has a way of being present in the other in just the way that the other is an invitation for our faith to grow. Yet being open to others is not particularly easy for many of us, even extroverts. In a column in the New York Times, David Brooks considers our cultural withdrawal into headphones and devices. He was on public transportation recently and noted that no one was talking to each other, no one. Now, to me, as an occasional traveler, this is perfectly acceptable and one of the only redeeming parts of flying on an airplane. But his point goes deeper than that. What he sees on the trains in New York goes much deeper into our social atomization. We act like we're alone, and we begin to think like we're alone. We begin to insist that we're alone in this. Alone doesn't mean I'm the only entity in the universe. It just means I'm the only one that matters. I remember coaching 5-year-old soccer and was given some really good coaching advice. Remember, I was told by a grizzled veteran of the elementary coaching guild, deep in the shadows, puffing his cigar. Remember, he said, when you're 5 years old, everyone else on the field, even those wearing the same color jersey as you, are there to take the ball away from you. A 5-year-old wants to kick the ball in whatever direction, which means she wants no one else to kick the ball. Maybe it's hard to fully grow out of this, to learn we're not just 5-year-olds looking out for our own interests, but part of a community to which we belong, to learn that others, as David Brooks concludes, that others do not diminish our being, but actually increase our happiness when we're open to them. It's not just a way of saying we should be extroverts. Centuries ago, a saying became a guiding light for Christians in monasteries and convents, which are actual institutional manifestations of introversion. Receive all as Christ, they said. At the Gospel Cafe in downtown Waco, a sign with those words hangs over the serving window. Receive all as Christ. Volunteer servers greet hundreds who come for lunch during the week with those words in front of their eyes. It's like a very short summary of so much of the gospel. You remember Matthew 25? Remember that parable Jesus tells? When you gave water to the thirsty, or food to the hungry, or clothes to the naked, or visited the prisoner, what you did for the least of these, you did that for me. Receive all as Christ because, well, you never know. The way the author of Hebrews puts it is, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it, have entertained angels unawares. And herein lies the great reversal in the gospel. It's not just that we should be nice to other people because you can help them, and Jesus wants you to help people in whatever way you can. It's that in the other person, you're going to meet God. Abraham and Sarah in Genesis 18 discovered that, the three visitors who came to them. So did the characters in the parable in Matthew 25. And so have we. When we have a spirituality of openness to creation, to people, to all that they bring, to new experiences in the other, that openness is where God meets us time and time again, because I think it must be, because it's then that we've taken a risk to invite the other into our life's orbit. And in an era of unprecedented global migration, we've learned that hospitality isn't just about being nice to someone, it's a matter of life and death. The world is getting smaller. Over the next 30 years, it's estimated that 143 million people in the world are likely to be uprooted from their homes by the effects of the changing climate all over the world. Rising seas on low coastlands, droughts, searing heat, and then there will be all of those displaced by conflicts that arise over diminished croplands and disappearing water sources. The world needs a church whose arms are as wide open as Jesus's. Just outside of Rome is St. Peter's Basilica, the largest and most famous church in the world. Its massive nave is capped by its dome designed by Michelangelo. It is an architecture, a piece of art, an invitation and gathering space unparalleled in the world. When you walk in, you feel small, which is exactly the point. Everything is outsized. It's all larger than life by design. This summer, several of us who were there together on pilgrimage climbed the steps into the top of the dome. When you look down at the people down there milling around the altar, they were like ants. St. Peter's is a reminder in marble and gold that God is a big God and we are oh so small. It's not exactly an intimate place of prayer. It's more like a monument to the grandeur of God. Some people love St. Peter's, some people don't get it, but everyone's eyes grow big as saucers when you walk in. And the outside's just as impressive. A huge paved area, St. Peter's Piazza, or St. Peter's Square, fronts the cathedral. Thousands can congregate out there for outside services. This piazza is framed by rows of 300 columns that form an oval along the long axis of the piazza. And that colonnade on both sides is topped by dozens of larger-than-life statues of apostles, saints, and church leaders from the ancient centuries. I think the message is clear. Turn your eyes up to them, and with them turn your eyes heavenward to God. All the spiritual movement there is looking backward in history and upward in praise. When you come, your feet are walking on the solid ground of that which endures. That's the message that is given. But now, for the first time in 400 years, a new monument has been erected in the piazza. The 20-foot sculpture depicts migrants and refugees from all cultural and racial backgrounds and from all historical periods of time together, shoulder to shoulder on a raft or a boat. A pregnant Polish woman escaping communism joins a Jewish man fleeing Nazi Germany. A Syrian war child refugee, an African family forced into slavery, joins a boy suffering the Irish famine of the 1840s. Mary and Joseph are there too with their baby. Over 140 are crammed shoulder to shoulder on a boat carrying them into a new future. In the sculpture, there's one refugee for every one of the saint statues perched on the columns around the square. It's as if to say, this is the human condition, and you could be one of them. And it is as if to say, this is the human condition, and God is among them. From somewhere in the middle of the mass of the migrants in this sculpture, extending upwards over their heads, is a pair of angel wings. The angel could be hiding among the refugees, or could be any of them. The angel represents the divine stranger in Scripture and the sacred within all people. You receive the stranger, you receive God. You find yourself in a place where you are the stranger, God is with you. The monument's called Angels Unaware from Hebrews 13. It's a reminder to those who turn their eyes upward to the glory of the heavens to find God, to also turn their eyes to one another, that God will be found amongst you because you belong to one another. I wasn't in a mode of looking for angels around me or being one or meeting others in any particular way a few weeks ago when I took our daughter back to Charlottesville, back to college, to help her move into her dorm. I was in furniture moving mode, which is definitely not angel mode. But one afternoon, running around a Target and so forth, we found ourselves just a few miles from our old house, and so I said, we're already out here, let's go on out and let's see the house. It feels like the sort of thing you're supposed to do when you go back to where you used to live. You drive slowly past your old house, see what's changed, remember some good times, point out things from the past to your children. We've done that a few times since we left back in 2008. We were there in 2019 on our way on a road trip up the East Coast, and again last year, and then just a couple weeks ago, so three times. So we drove by, and for the first time, someone was in the yard, a woman and her young child. Naturally, I pulled over and got out of the car. Now, I'm self-aware enough to know that an unknown man getting out of a car in front of a house with a woman and her toddler can be a stranger danger moment. And so I tread carefully. I said, hello, I'm sorry to bother you. I used to live here years ago. And she brightened up and she stepped forward and she introduced herself. We were two people, strangers to one another. Her little toddler playing with a bucket in the grass, my big baby leaning on the car, probably wondering when we could go and which exact way would her dad embarrass her this time. And then the woman said, you used to live here? I said, yeah. Are you the pastor? I said, yes. What kind of pastor are you? I said, a Baptist pastor. And then she did this, and I'm not kidding. She put her face in her hands, and she doubled over. What is happening here? When she stood up straight, she said, I'm sorry, I just can't believe you're here today. She said, my mother is dying, and I just drove back from Ohio last night, from being with her in Ohio. All the way home, I was praying that God would give me peace, and give me a sign that God was with me. I feel so far from home and from my family. And then you showed up on this day after all these years. Thank you. We talked some more as she told me about her family and her mom and the house now, the old fence that I built that needs to be repaired, and the garden I built that's still going, and the color yellow I painted that she's painting over. I had the idea she wanted me to know how our story continues now that we're both in it, in a way. She said, as we were talking, she was telling me about different things in the house. She turned and she said, "We love this tree." And she pointed to the maple tree right behind her. She said, "My four-year-old loves to climb in this tree. He scampers up its branches all the time." Now, I'd been looking at that tree over her shoulder the whole time as we talked. In a way, it's really why we drove by the house to check on it each time. The tree, even more than the house. And I told her, we planted that tree almost 20 years ago. 20 years ago in honor of a baby that we lost in miscarriage. That's our baby tree. And I come by when I'm in town to check on it and watch it grow. I love that your son is climbing in its branches. We said our goodbyes and we left. Two strangers to one another. Strangers. But whose lives are bound by a house and a garden, by our children, by some tears, by divine providence. We're bound to one another in ways mysterious and wonderful. Aren't we all? Come, let us break bread together.